This video is brought to you by Holocasa. Our tool transforms independent local real estate agents to global real estate agents. Create your own profile for free and get contacted by international investors. Sign up with the link in the description. Hello and welcome everyone to our 111th session of Holocasa. My name is Michael and today I'm talking to Robert Thompson from Hampton Roads in Virginia. Robert has been in the real estate industry for over 20 years and belongs to the top 1% agents in the Hampton Roads area. Robert, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really pumped to have you from Hampton Roads and also from the US. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Like I said, my name is Bob Thompson. Essentially, Hampton Roads is Virginia Beach, Norfolk area. Like I said, I have been in the industry about 20 years now. I absolutely love it. I describe myself as somebody who got lucky and fell into something that they absolutely have a passion for, and I'm quite happy about that.
Give us an overview of Hampton Roads, of the entire Hampton Roads area where you're from.
Okay, well, we essentially are a military community. Norfolk Naval Station is based here. That's pretty much the biggest naval station in the entire country, entire world, I believe. We also have military folks coming from everywhere, including NATO, because of Norfolk. And we also have the Virginia Beach Oceanfront and a lot of little smaller cities. We have the best of both worlds to where we have some of the quiet countryside, but we also have beaches, you know, everything within 30 minutes of each other.
Amazing. Yeah. For the international audience, also for me, I didn't know before, Hampton Roads is basically an area with various cities. You have on the one hand, you have Virginia Beach, Norfolk, and then you go even up. I just have a look on the map. You go even up to, you have this bridge to this peninsula. Give us an overview there, like how everything is connected. Is that also a reason for the military base there? How can I imagine? Also, maybe you can give us a quick overview of the structure, how the neighborhoods are being segmented, and also maybe real estate prices upcoming and trendy real estate neighborhoods.
Of course. Again, since we are, you know, where we're located, almost everything is connected by bridges and tunnels because, again, a lot of water. And it's quite common to that a lot of people will compare Hampton Roads to, believe it or not, we'll say New York, because we kind of have our own little boroughs and our own little worlds within worlds. Where I live in Chesapeake, I'm essentially 30 minutes from everywhere. So the market is quite strong because there is no inventory, which is perfect for both folks that want to flip and own, you know, rental property or want to just flip and resell. We have the Virginia Beach Oceanfront, which of course is always going to be your hotter area than anything else. We have beautiful parts of Norfolk, beautiful parts of pretty much every city across the board. And again, since there's no inventory, you are able to, you know, when you're selling, you're obviously going to be on the higher end. And when you're purchasing, you can always flip it. You can always turn it into a rental, apartment buildings, things of that nature. We've always got folks coming and going because we literally have every branch to the military, you know, between the different bases that are leaving and coming all the time, plus NATO. So we get a lot of outside experiences, and it's kind of almost a melting pot a lot of times over the years.
I can imagine. Is that then also that you have a certain drive for the ones who can't afford to live in Hampton Roads, that they are basically triggers to move to Richmond, Petersburg, or even south, where it's more rural?
Not really, because even in Hampton Roads, you can find a nice rural area, and you can still get into Hampton Roads relatively cheap overall. So there's really, like I said, there's pockets for everybody, depending on if you're, it's like anything else. If you're a 35-year-old on-the-go lawyer who's working all the time, then you're probably going to want to be in downtown Norfolk, perhaps in a nice condo to where you can come and go as you please and not deal with yard work. If you're a mom and dad and you're looking at good school systems, and you're probably going to want to be out in, you know, Virginia Beach, Chesapeake, Suffolk, things of that nature, to where you can just, you know, kind of quietly raise your kids in a suburban background.
How can I imagine a real estate market, which is so drawn towards the demand side?
Well, obviously, it works well if you're on the listing side of things, because, again, as you said, things are going very quickly. On the buying end, you've got to be creative, or a lot of times in my case, I'm looking for off-market properties for my buyers because I kind of want to be on the cutting edge of things. And you've got to, open yourself up to any and all options. A lot of times I will actually have my buyers look for something that is lower than their price point, because you would be surprised what will pop on that end. And then you've got a better shot of getting it instead of fighting with everybody at, let's say, the $350,000 market. If you're approved for $350,000, you really want to be fighting with your 295s and your 325s, because you can at least have a better show of strength in that regard. And a lot of times that will help you win the day. And you've just got to be creative and be smart about it. And that's where a good real estate agent comes into play. It's the honesty. It's the negotiation. It's not magic marketing or trying to tell you what you want to hear. You got to be honest with folks.
What do you think has contributed to your success over the years that you can give good service to potential buyers?
I think for me, you get what you see. And I'm always going to be honest with you. And I think that also works dealing with different investors and stuff like that, that I'm not afraid to open my eyes up to other aspects. So let's say, for instance, I've got a client that needs to be in Virginia Beach. They got to be under a certain price point. But one of the first things that I'm going to do is reach out to my investors and figure out where they are in their process. Obviously, they're buying in Virginia Beach. Do they have anything that's going to be coming available soon? Are they in the middle of working on something? Because sometimes investors may not want to flip that property and make it a pristine property. They may want to go in and maybe just do a little bit of work, especially if they've got an agent that they've worked with before and they've got a buyer that's ready to go. So they may go in and redo the roof and, let's say, redo the flooring, but they may not go in and rehab the kitchen completely because they know that my buyer is going to do that type of work themselves or is only approved for a certain amount. And that way everybody wins and gets what they want. The investor makes their money. And at the end of the day, my buyers are happy and know that I went the extra mile to make that happen for them.
What is your specialty? What is basically the services, or what are the services you're focused on?
Well, I would say that, like most agents, I cover a wide base of things, but I definitely specialize in investor properties, short sales. I got into short sales in 2008. And just started working them. It's just a process of doing them. Bank owns, I do a fair amount of bank owns, and I'm quite knowledgeable on that. Again, I think that's probably my strongest asset, is the fact that I'm going to tell you the truth and I'm going to do what I need to do to make it happen. At the end of the day, I work for that client and I'm not necessarily worried about doing the same old things. But short sales are a big one. I got into those quite early when they were going on. And that has given me a wealth of information. Plus, quite honestly, it's given me a wealth of investors that I can talk to. So I can either get my lower end properties under contract very quickly with an investor, or in turn, I can reach out to my investors and say, again, I've got a client looking for this. Where are you at in your process? And maybe we can put two and two together. Essentially, a short sale means that we are selling the house for less than what the owner is owed on it. So if you own a house and you owe $240,000, but the house is only, let's say, worth $200,000, it needs a lot of work or something of that nature, we get the bank to agree to the lower price point and sell the house as is. The beauty of that is that the homeowner can get out from under a property that's causing them damage, both personally and professionally. And number two, they don't have to pay any commissions. They don't have to pay anything. The bank essentially handles everything. And realistically, it's in the bank's best interest to do the short sale, because that's much better than a foreclosure. They'll get better numbers on that particular property. And typically, most of these loans are going to be government-backed anyway. So the banks essentially will get their monies back long-term.
Okay, interesting. Why is that better than foreclosures?
Because when a bank does a foreclosure, the foreclosure automatically has a certain image to it. So in other words, investors and your average day-to-day person is not going to pay as much on a bank-owned as they would a short sale, because the short sale has inherent value in it and it doesn't have to go through all the extra processes. And you know as well as I do, a vacant property, the longer it sits on the market, there's a better chance that it's going to be broken into or damaged, even in the best of neighborhoods. I've seen $700,000 properties get broken into. And of course, I've seen $63,000 properties get broken into. And it can happen at any time because it is vacant. So it's always in the best interest of the banks to try to work out a short sale.
Got it. Perfect. You mentioned the other term, which you just repeated, bancos, is?
Bank owned, or what we also call in the business REO, real estate owned. The banks typically, when it gets to that point, there's more maintenance involved because you've got to have somebody go out and secure the property. If the windows are broken, you've got to board up the windows, all of that sort of nickel and dime stuff that adds up very quickly. Typically, you've got to go through multiple broker price opinions to come up with your value. And then again, you've got to hire an agent and pay them to get it resold, of course.
Makes total sense. Okay. Thank you so much for the clarification.
No problem.
You are also focused or very experienced, and you work a lot with cash to key. And you mentioned that before we started in the notes, that this is something, or you also have it on your LinkedIn profile. What is that?
The Cash for Keys program is essentially the short sale, not so much the short sale, but it's the REO bank owned side of things. So in other words, the bank will come in, let's say somebody's living in the house and they've been foreclosed. It's my job to speak to that homeowner in a understanding manner and not come in confrontationally, and see if we can give the homeowner a few thousand dollars to politely move out of the property and not hurt the property in the process. You got to remember, most of these homeowners, you know, folks lose their home for basically two reasons, either divorce or job loss or something medical. Typically, those are your main reasons. And so they're already upset. They're not happy to be losing their home. So you have to go in with some grace and some understanding. And I try to do that. And I'm proud of my record of doing that, because the sooner we can get either a tenant, because sometimes there's tenants in there, they don't even know the house has been foreclosed. And that's always, you got to really feel bad for a tenant that's just kind of paying the rent on time. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then all of a sudden they get a knock on the door by somebody like myself that says, hey, by the way, this house has been foreclosed and you've got to move out. Now, again, we have policies in place for that. And the bank typically is, you would be surprised, the banks are very understanding of that situation, and they always will offer a cash for keys. So these tenants will have monies to put down on their next property. I typically, in my case, will step in and talk to their next prospective landlord and let them know what's happened, so they understand that it's not the tenant's fault.
And one more follow-up question. How can that happen that the owner doesn't know that the house they're owning is on foreclosure? Or are you talking about the tenant, correct?
It's talking about the tenant. And
I got it. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
You're right. And that works both ways in short sales too, because a lot of people, when you're getting, you kind of tendency to put your head in the sand and you think you have more time. I've gotten multiple calls from folks that wanted to do a short sale or were losing their home, but it was already too late. I mean, we're talking a day or two until the foreclosure actually happens. And at that point, there's really nothing you can do. And, you know, we're taught to pay our bills. We're taught to handle our business. And sometimes when we've been hit, you know, with a devastating medical issue, or we've lost our job, we just kind of put our head in the sand and hope that will all go away. And sometimes we don't do the right thing, like letting our tenant know, hey, you know, you're going to be losing this home, or we're taking the monies and spending it because we got to eat. So we're not focused on trying to be nice to the tenant, unfortunately.
Got it. Makes sense. Switching topics, you are belonging to the top 1% in the area. First of all, what does that mean?
Essentially means that when it comes to sales volume, it could also mean, you know, just, you know, units of sales. I'm typically in the top 1% in Hampton Roads. Obviously, it can vary a little bit. Sometimes it's top 1% for listings and 3% in sales, and they run it up and say that it's top 1%. It adjusts a little bit from time to time. I actually dropped last year. I broke my leg. It shattered it essentially, and spent some time on the couch and on the bed and didn't quite hit my numbers last year. So I did drop a little bit, and I'm going to be honest about that. But for the most part, I've prided myself, you know, on the last 15 to 20 years being consistently in the top 1% to 2% in Hampton Roads. And as a solo agent, I'm quite proud of that. I typically will do, depending on how many bank owns are going on at the time, I'll typically do between 50 and 70 deals a year.
Wow. That's amazing. It's crazy. Congratulations to that. That's
thank you.
That's very impressive. Now, with your experience of over 20 years in Hampton Roads, how has it changed during these two decades?
Well, I think it's like anything else, any other area. You know, we've had so much growth over the last 20 years. And the fact that I've lived here all my life and I am 50 now, it's amazing the growth that I've seen simply from the perspective that when I was growing up, there was still a lot of farmland. You know, things were a little bit quieter and gentler. The shipyards were still quite busy, and they've only, if anything, gotten busier and gotten bigger. And I think Hampton Roads collectively realized that even though we have the military, it was time to kind of start doing their own thing. So they've really developed some other nice areas or other, you know, captains of industries type of stuff. So that way they're always going to have, there's many ways that you can work here and be successful. We've got some tech corridors now once the tech market got hot. So it's, again, it's interesting to see, you know, quite a blend, and you can still, you know, buy the quote unquote typical small town home and have a neighborhood feel. And then you can also, you know, drive 15 minutes and go buy a condo and be in the heart of everything. It just depends.
Throughout those two decades, I believe you have handed over many keys. You have talked to many people. You have seen also a lot of maybe heartbreaks. Have there been maybe a couple of experiences or one experiences which you would like to point out?
I would say probably the one that still affects me the most, or the most important one, and it describes the duality of a real estate agent's life in so many ways. In 2008, 2009, I had a client that was only approved for $150,000. They had to be out in the rural areas of Suffolk, so about a 35 to 55 minute drive for myself. They had to have all their closing costs paid. They had to have everything had to be right all the way across the board. And we spent about 6 months looking for this particular property until we finally found what we were looking for. And they fell in love with it. And to this day, that couple thinks I am the greatest thing in the world. And as a matter of fact, their daughter actually eventually got into real estate. And, you know, when I talk to her from time to time, you know, she's always like, hey, my mom and dad say hello, please come by the house. Just good salt of the earth people that needed a help. And I was able to make that happen. I'm very proud of that. Now, truth be told, I didn't make any money off that transaction in any way, shape, or form. But here's the fun part of that. At literally the exact same time, I've got a friend of mine, very good friend. We sold his house for $310,000. We got it under contract in less than a week. And they bought a $650,000 property. His wife literally walked into the second house we looked at in a neighborhood that was in the process of being built. She walked in, looked around, and said, yeah, I'll take it. So because it was a builder's home, there was almost no negotiation because everything was pretty much cut and dry. I did very little work on that end of it. So that's the thing. I made a ton of money on that end. Let's be honest, didn't really do a whole lot because there really wasn't anything for me to do. But at the same time, I worked above and beyond for this other couple. And it's funny how that works out. And that's what I think people don't understand about real estate is that sometimes, yes, we do make really good money for sometimes doing a very minor amount of work. I'm not going to lie. But there were also times when we work really hard to help our client the best way possible and perhaps don't make what we should have made, but we deal with it because it all kind of evens out at the end. And like I always say, I do a volume business. I'm not worried about, you know, a nickel here and a nickel there. It doesn't really make a difference. At the end of the day, my attitude is tell me I did a good job and pay me. That's all I care about. When I started real estate and went full-time in 2007, because I had been part-time before that as a chemist, I had a broker that did not know barely anything and did not do a good job. I joined a very large power team for 2008, 2009, and 2010. And I am proud to say two of those years, I was his top listing and buying agent. Now, my mother passed away in 2009, so I took some time off. I learned what I could, and then it becomes a situation where you get tired of being told what to do and you have to learn to do things your own way. And I don't do BS very well. I'm not, particularly refined. And I don't walk in, even if I go into a $1 million house, I'm not wearing a suit and tie. It's not who I am. I'm jeans and a t-shirt at best 9 out of 10 times. Maybe this particular collared shirt, because I've got like 5 of them all in the same color, because it's just who I am. So I have been essentially an independent agent since 2011, and it was the best thing I ever did. And there's always naysayers. My old broker or team leader, you know, told me that none of his people that had ever left his team had ever been successful. And most of the years, I blow out his entire team out of the water. Even with his whole team, I end up outdoing them. And I'm very proud of that, because, again, it fits my needs. And I'm a hard head, and I like to do things a certain way. And I like to be able to do that and to not have to play the party line. I do believe that if you're a new agent, by all means, join a team. Learn how to do what we do, that day-to-day stuff, the important stuff, and go at it 110%. And then when the time comes, you'll know. I mean, I spent the last half of 2010 planning to go solo. I knew it was coming, and I put all of my, you know, and I did all my legwork and figured out, well, this split is terrible. What am I paying for? Then I went back to my broker and said, okay, my split is terrible. What can we do to make this work so I can stay? And he didn't want to hear about it. He was money focused and not agent focused. So I was gone. That was it. 2011. Have a nice day. Moved on.
Do you need anything particular except for the broker license in order to go independent?
Not really. And you can go independent with a brokerage also. As you know, in the States, they have a lot of what's known as 100% or virtual company, real estate companies. Allison James Estates and Homes is one that I personally recommend. And there's some other ones that are quite nice, to where you're underneath a company, but it's very minor, and you're free to run your own business as you see fit. And you don't have to do all of the rah-rah team meetings and all that. You can if you choose to, and you can speak to your broker regularly if you need to. But for the most part, if you've been an agent for a while, you kind of know what you need to do, and you don't need all of the going into the meetings and glad handing and all of the other assorted stuff. And let's be honest, the days of sitting around watching a videotape of somebody trying to train us are gone. I can go on the internet right now, and thousands of training courses are available to me, mostly for free. And I could follow any particular real estate guru that I choose to follow if I wanted to.
Absolutely. Do you have a team which you can consult, or which you have under contract regarding legal appraisal, certain other jobs? Or do you do everything on your own?
I have partnerships, but they are not partnerships based in money, where a lot of companies will partner up with a title company and they will partner up with a lender, and there's an exchange of monies back and forth. I don't do that. I choose not to do that. My mortgage partner is somebody that I trust completely. I've worked with for a long time, so I will recommend him. My title company, they do excellent work. They keep me in line. If I screw the paperwork up, they'll catch it and go, "Bob, you forgot this. Okay, sorry." And I'll fix it. I have a virtual assistant, and I have other newer agents that will come to me. And the trade-off is that I can help them out. And sometimes if I'm under the weather or out of town, they can step in to take care of something if I need it. But I find it works better that way than doing the proverbial scratch my back, I scratch yours over money. I find it distasteful. And again, I'm using certain people, like my home inspector, because I trust him immensely. And I know that he's super qualified. And to me, that's way more important than anything else.
Amazing. I mean, even more impressive that you hit those numbers with basically like partnerships and one person show. Congratulations once again to that. Now going a bit deeper on Hampton Roads, is there anything right now you would say, you know, this is definitely something worth mentioning in terms of investment opportunities? Maybe we can go via class A, B, C, or we can go via certain investment budgets. It's up to you. Maybe there's something you have right now as inventory where you say, okay, this is definitely interesting, or even a certain neighborhood which you regard as something also from an investment perspective quite interesting.
I would say what you can definitely tell is that we are a hot market because the corporate investors have come to town. They started coming in several years ago, purchasing property and either A, rehabbing them and then flipping them, or B, they were renting them out, which it just depends on the company. A lot of agents are afraid to work with these companies or don't understand how they work and operate, where I've never had that problem. And my attitude has always been, okay, well, if we want to try something new, let's try it. As long as everybody understand what's going on and my client is understanding of what is going on, and sometimes it can be the best policy to not just use your run-of-the-mill investor. And as a real estate agent, I think it helps my clients that are selling because, again, I can offer them a wide spectrum of corporate investor, what I would call a strong investor, one of my top investors that's just buying and selling all over the area, and then perhaps even reaching in and helping a newbie investor that comes to me and says, well, Bob, this is my income level. This is where I'm looking to purchase. I would say you can, across the board, find plenty of stuff if you dig in the right direction and you have an agent that can do that for you to where you can flip and make money. The only place I would not do that is if it is oversaturated with opportunities, because that tells you it's already been picked clean. Case in point, there are several neighborhoods in Portsmouth where at any given time, there are 15 brand new rehabs available and there are, you know, 10 to 15 properties that you can buy for really cheap. The problem is the time on market is longer. Those neighborhoods sometimes have certain stigmas to them because they are a little bit lower income neighborhoods. And I would rather see somebody put their money elsewhere. I want to be where people are fighting to get into. Nobody's fighting to get into that neighborhood. They're buying in that neighborhood because they may not have a choice in the matter. But realistically, if you've got that many properties available that have been rehabbed and are for sale, that neighborhood's been picked through. You don't want to be on that end. You want to be on the up and coming end of stuff. So that's a lot of times what I'll point out, especially if I'm getting an out of town investor that's calling me on one of my properties or knows of my reputation, which does happen, and will just send me a random call. Hey, Bob, I'm looking to buy in this area. I see your name's on a lot of things. What about over here? And I'll try to direct them in a better path.
Amazing. Regarding first-time purchasers and also even first-time investors, is there anything you would like to share regarding challenges or obstacles or roadblocks which they should be aware of, but also tips in a positive way which you would like to give, because there might be something happening which they're not aware of, and obviously they are inexperienced.
When I speak to first-time investors, a lot of times you can tell they are first-time investors, and that's okay. The problem is that there's a certain amount of investors that are talking and not doing. They're reading the books and they're excited about the process, and they're using the jargon, but they don't really know what they're talking about or what they're doing. Those investors, I would prefer them to just be honest with me and tell me that Bob, I haven't done this before. I don't know how to do it. Can you help me? Honesty goes a long way as far as I'm concerned. If you come at me with hey, Bob, we're going to put a deal together and I'm going to use you to sell the property and blah, 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 I'm going to see right through that. And quite honestly, I don't have time to work with you and try to teach you if you're not willing to learn, because it's easy to go to an investor meeting or tell your friends and neighbors that you're going to buy something and not actually ever buy anything because you're playing that role. And I'm guilty of that as much as everybody else is. When I started buying rental property, you know, I thought I was king of the world, and that's not the case. And you have to understand that and recognize that. For your first-time home buyers, my best thing I can tell them is interview your agent. There are a lot of agents in my industry, and I get in trouble for this, that do it as a part-time job. Now, when I say part-time, I mean part-time in time only. Sometimes you can be part-time at it and give it your 100% while you're transitioning to full-time. I did that myself when I worked at the chemical plant. So I understand that. But if you literally are going into the office once or twice a year, you're selling 5 to 8 homes a year. I don't care if it's been for 15 years. You don't know what's going on in the market, and you shouldn't pretend that you do. I'm sure you're a very nice person, but you don't know how to negotiate. You don't know what's going on in the market, and you should choose your real estate agent, not because he's your cousin's uncle's brother's best friend. Are they selling property? Do they understand how things work? One of my most, I hate to say it, but prideful things is that I do a lot of referral business, because my folks know that they can send somebody to me and they know, hey, Bob's a little rough around the edges, and he's going to be honest with you, but he gets the job done. And that's what counts at the end of the day. It's not about silly slogans. It's not about little tchotchkes and closing gifts and assorted stuff. Like, none of that's got anything to do with anything. My job is to be honest with you, to tell you what's going on, especially as a first time home buyer. Yes, you may walk into a house and it looks shiny and new, but I can tell you, okay, this is a really bad rehab, and this is why. The floor is uneven. This has not been done. We have 2-prong outlets when there's supposed to be 3-prong outlets. Things of that nature that your average agent may not tell you. My job is to tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not, and not just go, well, do you like it? Oh, well, if you like it, then let's write the contract, because I want that wow factor. I want you to walk in the door and go, oh my God, I want this house. What do I have to do? And sometimes that's more than what folks are willing to do, and that's okay, but they've got to be aware of that. You know, this in our market, you can't just, you know, try to cut a deal and make it work. That's not how it goes. But I want that wow factor. I want them to just fall in love with the property, because let's be honest, most people are not going to be making a lot of those. And you don't just want to walk in and buy something to buy something. I'd speak from experience. I did that. I walked into the second house we were looking at. It was 4 bedrooms and 2 baths. I walked around and said, yeah, this will work. I'll buy it. My agent, very nice lady, still in the industry, only sells 5 or 6 houses a year. And she looked at me and said, okay. And we moved forward and wrote the contract. When what she said or should have said was, let's look at some other properties to make sure this is really what you want. Let's do the Friday night drive-by, because every neighborhood looks real nice and shiny and new at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Case in point, I bought my house, we moved in, and there's a 300-pound redneck listening to white power music behind me, and there's a meth head to my left. That is not a joke. That is the truth. Now, luckily, the redneck moved out after about 6 months, and the meth head ended up getting foreclosed on after a year, and a nice investor bought the property and rehabbed it. But these are the challenges. Honestly, having a really bad real estate agent was the best thing that could have happened for me, because it taught me what not to do when I came into the industry. I had already learned a very hard lesson.
It's actually interesting that you say that. I still don't understand why there's not the offering to just sleep over at something where I'm supposed to buy, or where I'm planning to buy. Or is that common? Like, if I bought something and it's supposed to be my house, I want to just stay there for a week to see, like, is anything happening, like, on a Wednesday night?
Not going to happen, but you should always do what, again, the Friday night drive-by. So you should go buy that house in the evening to see what's going on. And yeah, Sometimes it may be a really good neighborhood, but let's say there's one guy that likes to get drunk and have his buddies over every single weekend until the late hours. That's the type of information you need to know. Or, and I know it's a popular term right now, is there a Karen in the neighborhood? And is she going to, if you're buying in an HOA or a condo or whatever, is she going to be out there sticking her nose in your business? Those are the type of things that you kind of need to know before you pull the trigger on something. You know, right, wrong, or otherwise, I think it's important. And I think a lot of agents either overlook that, or quite honestly, don't know enough to have that conversation, because they want the money and they need the money. In my case, and a busy real estate agent, it's a volume business. It's not about every single nickel and dime. So you're not in a hurry to sell a house, because you don't need to be in a hurry to sell a house.
Perfect. You already covered your service offerings in an implicit way, but maybe explicitly you can just name all the service offerings you are having, and when people should reach out to you, when, with which need, with which desire.
Well, I'm one of those weird people that actually answers the phone. So I know it's a strange concept, and a lot of real estate agents don't. To me, you miss opportunities and you miss chances. And yes, you get spam and stuff like that, but 9 out of 10 times, it's always good to answer the phone. So my opinion would be is I can help you across the board on typical buying, typical selling. Obviously, I do a lot of specialty work in terms of investor style properties, or we'll call it properties that have been beat up and need to find the right buyer for them. And that seems to be the way I go a lot of times, because again, word gets around that, okay, well, you know, Bob did this and Bob does that. But the biggest thing is send me an email, text me, literally call me on the phone. Doesn't hurt my feelings. And I actually prefer that, because a lot of times you can gather some information very quickly. And then sometimes it can just be information. I have no problem with that. Information is free. And I always want to be able to be that information, whether I get the listing or not, whether I put a sale together or not, is immaterial. I want you to at least know that you can call me and I'm going to get you the answer. Case in point, I have several people that will call me once a year. I've never met these people before, but they own particular properties, and they'll call me and go, "Hey, Bob, just want to check in and see what the market's doing." Now, I don't follow them up with 1,000 emails and little tchotchkes and bug the snot out of them. There's no reason to. They call me. I give them an update on their house. "Hey, Jim, the house is now worth X amount of dollars. Market time is this." "Oh, great. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you later." Cool. And then a year goes by and they'll call me again. Sooner or later, those folks are going to sell that house, or they're going to know somebody that needs to buy in Hampton Roads, and you can damn sure bet they're going to contact me, because I don't do the hard sell. I'm not going to hit them up with some stupid email that we all get, that I still get in my inbox all the time, about how they need to do it now and the market is shifting and, ooh, you know, you got to do this and you got to do that. Just answer the phone and do the best that you can. And by all means, even if you've got any number of questions, whether you're in a newbie investor, whether you're a strong investor, whether you're even just thinking about buying a house, my attitude is always, it's better to plan ahead now. Even if you're 6 months away, let's get you pre-approved, or worse, let's find out why you can't get pre-approved and put a game plan together. And unfortunately, I use that word a lot with my clients, game plan, but to me, it makes sense. We need to know what our strategy is and what we're looking for, and you can never start that too early. So by all means, call me on the phone. Happy to answer it. Don't have a problem with it.
Do you think that the market right now is good to buy? Increasing interest rates, maybe, you know, some people, depending on the market, are talking about a bubble in real estate. I don't know about Hampton Roads. What do you suggest, basically?
And I get a lot of trouble for this one, and it doesn't bother me. It's always not a good time to buy. It depends on individual situation. It depends on where you're going to be in 3 to 5 years. If you're not planning to be in the area in 3 to 5 years, there's no sense in buying. If it doesn't fit your particular lifestyle at the time, there's no reason to buy. Case in point, if you're a young military person and you're going out to sea every 3 to 6 months, most of the time, why would you buy a single family home? Number one, you don't have time to cut grass and do all of that. Or is that really what you want to be doing with all your free time? If you're staying in the area, then buy a townhouse or buy a condo so there's less maintenance, or don't buy at all if you're not going to be here. And there's nothing wrong with that. I always recommend to folks that are getting a divorce or, you know, their change of life situation, wait 6 months. Yes, renting isn't cost effective, but to me, it's peace of mind. You know, there's a lot of emotional capital that goes into buying a home and making a major decision like that. Myself included, when I got divorced, I gave my wife the house and I moved into an apartment because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in the future. And it felt like the right decision for me at the time. Yes, I could have turned around and bought something immediately, but I didn't see any reason to get bogged down with something that I didn't. At the time, the world was wide open to me and I didn't know what I was going to do next. Was I going to stay in Hampton Roads? Was I going to move on? You know, obviously I hadn't even started dating again yet. So there is no great time to buy. It just depends on an individual situation. And there's nothing wrong with staying in a rental situation, or God forbid, living at home if it fits your needs. I've got a teacher friend of mine that called me a couple of weeks ago, and she's thinking about buying. but she's not in a hurry and she's living at home and her parents are happy to have her. And I told her, stay at home, pay your bills down. Now, if a particular property pops open and it happens to be the right situation, then of course we'll pull the trigger because she wants to be in certain parts of Virginia Beach where she works. And if we find something special that fits her needs, great. But if it doesn't make a difference. I've never been one of those people that says it's always better to buy than rent. I don't believe that. Yes, it costs you a little bit more money, but to me, peace of mind goes a long way in that process.
I really like your answer. On the one hand, because you say neglect a little bit the macro economy, you know, go on your unit, on the case in point. Does it work for you? If it works for you, it will also work for you in a down market. It will also work for you in an up market. It's fine. I really like that. And I also like the peace of mind. And I call it like emotional liability, which you always have to account for, because everyone has a different threshold on stress factor and anxiety. And I think this has to be accounted for. And many people just don't do it, because they think they should buy because they're being talked into. In the end, everyone has to be very self-aware on what is right now in your life situation the best decision. And then also make sure that you just can sleep very well. And that's priceless. Bob.
Yeah, no, I agree completely.
I really appreciate the conversation. I really, really liked the entire exchange. I learned a lot. I learned about Hampton Roads, which I again realized that I'm very ignorant about the world, which I was not aware about the military base, and it's a very interesting area, which also throughout the last 50 years has really like transformed. That's how you describe it very well. You also gave us very technical expertise on short sales, on bank loans and foreclosures and the dynamics there. You also walked us through the entire experience you have been having with the very interesting long sales cycle sometimes, which then can be cut off by something which pops up and you sell immediately. And you really gave us a very, very interesting mindset, I believe, in terms of cut the bullshit, make sure that you understand the client. Then the client wants to purchase something which is in their mind. Try to really read it, ask questions, pick up the phone, and go get your job done, and make it in a very efficient way. And your numbers speak for themselves. It's impressive, once again, that you're outperforming everyone else on your own. Once again, I really appreciate it. Is there anything you would like to share with the audience which we haven't touched upon?
Not that I can think of. Again, I think the biggest thing is ask questions and don't be afraid to research, especially if you're a first-time homebuyer. And even if you're an investor, research your agent and figure out what they've done and what they haven't done. That's important. And again, folks can always reach out to me on, you know, I'm Bob the Agent on my Facebook. I'm Bob the Agent on LinkedIn, all of the social stuff. By all means, you can find my information. Call me, shoot me an email, find me on social media, ask me a question. You're not going to hurt my feelings in any way, shape, or form. I love it. And I always try to be here to help. And I think it's important to, whether it's real estate or whether it's anything, you really want to see a passion or a love for something, whoever that you're working with, whether it's, I don't know, going to, you know, get a good waiter at a nice restaurant, someone that really enjoys what they do. You want to be able to see that passion and that drive in them. And I think that's important, almost over important in my industry, because, you know, buying a home is such an important thing, and it doesn't really happen but a couple of times in a lifetime, realistically.
Thank you so much. Great that you already shared your contact information. I will put that into the show notes. And sending the best regards over the Atlantic Ocean. I wish you a very nice afternoon. I'm basically ready to go to sleep. And I send you a big hug, and I really appreciate it. And I hope we do it soon once again.
I would love to, and I'm always here to help. And I very much appreciate your time, my friend.
Thank you so much, Bob. Have a nice afternoon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.